You are listening to Heal Your Natural Wellness Podcast, episode number 24. My guest today is a pediatric psychologist talking about the long-term impact of the pandemic on children, coping with anxiety, and the tools to help them. Hello everyone, Astrid here from HealYouNaturally.com. If this is your first time listening, then thanks for tuning in. The Heal Your Natural Wellness Podcast is produced twice a month for your enjoyment, and show notes are found at www.healyounaturally.com/podcasts. Come back often and feel free to add the podcast to your favorite RSS feed or iTunes, Apple Podcast, iHeartRadio, Stitches, Alexa Play, Spotify, and all major podcast directories. You can also follow me on Twitter at @heal_naturally and on Instagram, Facebook, and Pinterest at @healyounaturally. All links are in the show notes. Now let's get into the show. Hey everyone, welcome to the Heal Your Natural Wellness Podcast. Today I have a phenomenal guest. Her name is Dr. Roseanne, and she is a trailblazing psychologist for almost 30 years, a pediatric mental health expert, and the founder and director of the Global Institute of Children's Mental Health and Dr. Roseanne and Associates. Her Connecticut-based center, established in 2001, has helped thousands of children and adults reverse the most challenging conditions such as ADHD, autism, anxiety, depression, concoction, learning disability, Lyme's disease, PANDAS, and many more. Dr. Roseanne treats these conditions using proven holistic therapies such as neurofeedback, biofeedback, psychotherapy, and nutrition using her trademarked two-week intensive 360 reboot program. Her mission is to teach parents how to reduce and reverse their child's symptoms using proven natural therapies in her book, It's Gonna Be Okay, and of course, the Get Unstuck program, the step-by-step way to change your child's mental health, give parents the tools for lasting change. Author of the Teletherapy Toolkit, Therapist Handbook for Treating Children and Teens, and course, the first of its kind, is a professional's guide to virtual therapeutic activities and how to keep kids engaged in teletherapy. She's also co-authored of the best-selling book, Brain Under Attack, a resource for parents and caregivers of children with PANS, PANDAS, and autoimmune encephalopathy. Named a thought leader in children's mental health by Forbes, she has been featured on dozens of media outlets such as the Mel Robinson Show, Fox News, CBS, NBC, and many more. Welcome to the Heal Your Natural Wellness Podcast, Dr. Roseanne.
Well, thanks, Astrid. Glad to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you. Super excited, guys. You're going to love Dr. Roseanne. I haven't known her for a long time, but I'm already in love with her. She's got a beautiful background. Her energy is phenomenal, and she also has really, really good stuff to help children. So we need Dr. Roseanne around, and I'm going to keep her around for a long time. So let's jump in. Why don't you, okay, before that, some of the topics that we'll be covering are going to be teletherapy toolkit, how to keep special needs children engaged, how can we help children during this pandemic, like the right tools, what will be the long-term impact for them, and also tips for working and learning from home during the coronavirus. I know a lot of parents are overwhelmed, anxious because of all these new changes with the pandemic. So let's jump right in. Dr. Roseanne, why don't you tell us a little bit about your journey? How did you get into the holistic part of the mental health for children and everything else?
Yeah. And, you know, Astrid, those are great questions. So I can't wait to dive into them. But I actually work with all ages. It's just that I'm a woman on a mission. I'm plant, I am going to change the way we view and treat children's mental health. Mm-hmm. And I have been working really actively on it for a long time, but now that's part of why I do the media, because it really gets the message out there that we are the CEOs of our own health and we can reverse our own issues, including mental health. And, you know, for a long time, we've been feeling that it's not okay to be uncomfortable and people want to take a pill really quickly and make things better, but it's okay to be uncomfortable. And I think the pandemic is reminding us of that, that you can't just take a pill. Sometimes we need to change our behavior. So it's the focus of my work to improve the brain and body, but it's also to change the behaviors. But I have always been holistic. I'm the daughter of Italian immigrants. And so I didn't know that, you know, food wasn't medicine, because it is. Right. And, you know, I never had, you know, my parents made everything from scratch. We didn't have processed foods until maybe I was like a teenager. And we just used natural remedies for things. So I really believe that it was my calling to be a mental health provider. And I was a young child and I used to just say, you know, I want to be a psychologist. And I really don't even know where it came from. It was just a knowing for me. And so when I went into the world of mental health in the early 90s, you know, yes, medication was king already at that point. But really, there was a hard shift by the end of the decade towards a lot of medication. So as I saw kids and individuals really struggling more and more and more with mental health, what I saw was there was a real lack of efficacy with the standard of care, which was sit down and talk to me or do some medication. And if the talk therapy didn't work right away, they pushed you towards medication like really hard. And to this day, they make parents feel like garbage, like they're criminal if yeah. they're not doing an SSRI. Right, Astrid?
Yeah, you're 100% right. Like yeah. you are judged if you question your pediatrician regarding, or forget, I was kicked out of my pediatrician, the group, because I questioned the vaccines. I'm like, I had already read the inserts and I'm like, what are the benefits of the MMR? I didn't go to my son's vaccinations appointments. It was my husband then, because I just couldn't get myself to it. Like the times that I've never had anxiety, thankfully, but the times that I developed severe anxiety to the point that I couldn't sleep or eat was right before I knew that my son was going to get vaccinated, because we know, right? So they vilify you because you...
You make choices, right?
Exactly.
And that's why I say, you know, we are the CEOs of our own healthcare. And, you know, when it comes to mental health, it's just such a dinosaur, right? They really are ignoring evidence-based treatments that reduce and often reverse mental health symptoms. Like, absolutely. And parents and individuals come to me all the time and they're like, why are we not hearing about this? Like, so last night I was doing a follow-up. So, you know, a lot of my work is based, all my work is based on neuroscience and evidence-based treatments. But when people work with me in person, they start with something called a QEG brain map, where they come in, we look at how their brain is functioning through this technology called a QEG, and it does an average of the surface electrical activity of the brain. And fancy words, but basically it gives me a picture of the functioning of the health of the brain. And you can see, like, is this person have anxiety? Does this person have ADD? Are there nutrient deficiencies? Is there a gut issue? You literally can see all these things in a brain map and you don't have to guess, right? So one of the biggest problems in mental health is we're ignoring lab work and we're ignoring QEGs, and we're sending people down a rabbit hole searching and for answers based on guess. Right? You know, an intake is guessing, right? The clinical yep. experience of that person is what determines what diagnosis and treatment you get. So you get the wrong diagnosis, you get the wrong treatment. And what are we focusing on? We're focusing on psychiatric medication, which doesn't have a lot of evidence behind it, right? And a lot of the research, which has been largely pulled for SSRIs, only looked at, they did 8-week studies initially with, you know, Prozac and whatnot. And when you look at the data, they only do the first 4 weeks. Because wow, the first 4 weeks, there was an improvement. But at the 8-week mark, the majority of people in the initial studies, actually their behaviors worsened, exacerbated. Wow. And when you, right? So people are listening or trying these medications, they already know this answer, that they go from one medication to another medication. There's a great documentary called Medicating Normal about a woman who was a veteran's journey for this. So, you know, we have to look at the research and the evidence, Astrid, right? This is why all these people are listening to you, because they want to hear what they can do, what is possible, right? So that's what I do, is show people those steps. And, you know, what's more important than the mental health of our kids?
Oh yeah. Nothing else. Like, you know, if they're not healthy physically and mentally, we're not happy, you know,
and no,
they're not happy. Nobody at home is happy, but for us parents, it's extremely concerning.
Yeah. So, and you know, you're only as happy as your happiest child, right? Like, you know, so if your kid's unhappy, like you said, we're really going to struggle. And, you know, so many of the parents that I go to, you know, that come to me, I should say, I might be the 10th, 15th, 20th provider by the time they get to me, and a kid might be 10 or 12. So I had a mom come to me and we had our second point. We did the brain map. That was my story. We did our second appointment to review the progress from the first appointment. And what was the treatment? A lot of neurofeedback and she had OCD, a very specific type of psychotherapy for OCD called ERP. It's exposure and response prevention. It teaches you to talk back to your OCD. And most people who are OCD are getting the wrong type of therapy. Yeah. We're doing talk therapy, which activates the obsessions and compulsions. So the mom was like, this is amazing. This is so dramatic, the change that she had. Well, first of all, she listened. She made some dietary changes. She added magnesium. She added some inositol, which is clinically proven for a subset of OCD. There are certain people that respond to it. It's amino acid. And she followed up with a functional physician to do lab work and all those things to look at what else could be driving these mental health issues. And then they did the hard work. They focused on the behaviors. We calmed her nervous system. And I love neurofeedback. I love biofeedback. It's the basis of my work, but I also do meditation. There's inexpensive biofeedback like heart math. There's so many ways to do things and people just don't know. But she had gone to a lot of providers and had been misdiagnosed for 5 years plus.
Wow.
And with anxiety disorder, when it was like a flashing red light case of OCD. So then I had to convince the parents through psychoeducation that it was really OCD. And that is why she couldn't get better. She was like one step away from a psychiatric hospital placement with the level of OCD she had as a young teenager. That is unfortunately kind of what's happening to people. And if she had gotten help and then the right treatment, she wouldn't be coming to me. And that's what is part of my mission, really, to help these providers better recognize it so that they can walk parents down the right path. But parents need to know, if my kid's not getting better, I've got to look.
Something else. Wow.
Right?
Yes. This is so beautiful. And you just said it, you know, the work that you're doing is so relevant, and it's great, because you're teaching other providers, guys. So what's happening is, with what Dr. Roseanne is doing, is she's going to, we're spreading awareness. We're spreading this message, and she will do it. These practitioners are going to learn these, new techniques, right? Or not new, they're old, but
effective. They're old techniques.
They're old techniques and effective. And so they're going to be able to apply them in more children, more people are going to be diagnosed earlier, and you are going to minimize the suffering. So this is such a beautiful topic.
And I'm hoping, Astrid, that people don't even get clinical diagnoses. So the first sign of a problem that a person has, a mental health problem, you know how long it takes on average before they get help? Take a guess.
I'm going to say like maybe 6 years,
11 years.
Wow.
First sign of a mental health problem, 11 years on average. I'm going to tell you that's average. Totally true. That's on average. So that's clinical research. I mean, that is mind blowing.
It is.
Right? But what it is those signs of anxiety, those signs of a mood, a behavioral issue, they start early. Parents are asking for help. Sometimes they get ignored, right? Sometimes they're given a pill. But what's happening is we're ignoring those signs of mental health problems. And, you know, like the pandemic, right? Some kids, individuals, people, adults, they're having mental health problems sometimes the first time. This is the first time they're having it. I've seen people have panic attacks for the first time, depression. So when we see a kid struggling with sleep, a change in friend groups, being snarky, being pulled away, don't ignore it. Get help from a licensed mental health provider, because nobody ever regrets getting help. Nobody does.
Exactly.
They only regret when they don't. And I just feel like, you know, and parents ask for help. I mean, they really do. Sometimes from school people, or sometimes they think, well, he's a straight A student. You know how many straight A students come to me and they're in a complete breakdown or some level of distress? A lot.
Oh, I'm sure. You know, this is it's a pretty relevant topic right now, which is going to bring us to one of the questions. So right now, and this is something that I've mentioned before and stuff that I've shared on social media, what will be the long-term impact of the pandemic on children?
Yeah. So, I mean, in the end, do we know what the long-term impact on children's mental health is? We don't. Okay. But when we look at children's mental health, I mean, I always try to be really positive and give people the tools to be proactive, to put stress inoculators in place for children. So there is going to be an impact for some children. For some children, they're going through this pandemic like a champ. Better than their parents, right? Yeah. They seem to be doing okay. Some of my kids that I work with are like thrilled to be doing virtual learning. I'd say the majority of kids are missing their friends, right? So I think missing friends and right and feeling lonely. Like I'm so busy, Astrid, that I forget that I haven't seen my friends. But when I really think about it, God, I'm sad. You know what I mean? Like as an adult. So
imagine them, like how they feel, right?
Right. And so then we think of kids where their worlds are their friends, right? And they're missing their structure and routine. So I think overall, if we do as much as we can for kids, they will move beyond this. What are the biggest determinants of a child's mental health is a parent's mental health. And we know that through research that even when a mother is interacting with her baby or a parent, the research is with mothers, of course, right? They're always putting stuff on mothers. That if a mother is depressed or not interacting with her child in a way that there's an exchange and a mirroring and a back and forth, that the child's mental health is affected. And they do these research studies where they have a mom interact with a baby and then stop interacting and have a neutral face. And every time the baby tries desperately to engage with the mother, and then you see the same response. The baby gets very upset and starts hysterical crying. That's the kind of impact we have on our kids' mental health. So what can we do proactively, right? A lot. So first, let's get our stuff together. Let's take care of ourselves. We talk about self-care. It's not a luxury. It's a necessity.
Yes.
Right?
So true. It is no longer a luxury. Yes.
Yep. And so, yes, I love to get my nails done and go to massage, but self-care is taking a minimum of 10 minutes every day to calm your nervous system. And there's lots of ways to do it. So you can do deep breathing. You can take a magnesium breath. You can do some biofeedback like heart math. You can do the free downloads of meditations everywhere. There's lots of things that you can do, but we must quiet our nervous system for at least 10 minutes a day. And we know that after 40 days of meditation, 40 straight days of meditation, your brain actually changes. So there is a huge impact and we're on constant overload. So that is important. So first take care of yourself so that you can better respond to these crazy stressors that we have on us in this pandemic. I mean, I have moms and dads who are like working from home. The kids are, they got four kids. They're trying to do virtual learning. I mean, this is a hard time. And yes. I think acknowledging it's a hard time, but then trying to keep it together when, you know, nobody's perfect, right? Mm-hmm. But try your best to be an example for managing stress. And when it's not perfect, tell your kid, like, I'm having a really hard day today. I didn't sleep at all last night and my boss needs this by 10 a.m. What do you think we could do right now? And, you know, that's how I talk to my kids, and my kids are problem solvers. Like, we want our kids to have resilience and skills. So using this time to build resilience for your kids is super important, but it's not going to happen if you don't have self-care.
Absolutely. That's an excellent point and very important. I have a question. Like, what is, because even myself, if we're going to be vulnerable here, I have sometimes a hard time on what to share with my son. He's 9 years old and whatnot. So I want him to, you know, to see that I'm strong, that I'm resilient. I teach him resiliency and also be able to express your feelings, let, you know, ride your emotions, don't hide them. I let him express himself, but then sometimes he tries to, did you work late last night? You know, are you tired? And so I battle with like how much to share with them, especially at these times. What are some of the things, like you mentioned, you said you talk to your children and you say, you know, I need to get this deadline done and stuff like that. Like, is that appropriate? Like, what is appropriate and what is not, for example?
Yeah. So first of all, there is no roadmap for this, but this is an ongoing conversation and it starts with, so my kids, I've always spoken to them like this. So it doesn't mean you can't start, but you have to weave it in and you have to make sure you're talking to your kid at their developmental level. So, you know, you might have a 9-year-old who's like a 57-year-old, like my 10-year-old came out like a 57-year-old and I can talk to him at 2. Like I could his brother at 15. You know what I mean? Like he gets it. He makes these connections. He's so funny. He says he's not going to be a therapist, but I'm like, oh my God, you're like so a therapist, you know?
Mind blowing. Like they're at my son too. Sometimes he's very eloquent. And some of the things he said sometimes just throws me off. Like, what do I say to this? You know?
Yeah. Like so deep, right? Yeah. So know where your kid is and have these conversations. So, you know, I grew up in a household where things were very open on a lot of levels. So they're business owners. I learned all kinds of things about business. Like if they were buying a property or something like that, Italian immigrants, right? We talked about it. I knew about it. And we knew to keep it private. And these are just part of our conversations. Like I didn't know it was abnormal. And how grateful am I today for those conversations? Mm-hmm. But do you tell your kid everything? Do you tell them how distressed you are? Absolutely not. That's not appropriate. But right. In the case of what you're saying, like, you know, you could be like, so for example, this has been crunch time, right? You know, I wrote 4 books in COVID. We decided to launch the last book first. This has been... The whole Hodge family is on board on the ship. So we were like, listen, kids, this is what's going on. Mommy's doing this. Daddy's going to be doing this. Grammy's going to be on. I let everybody know. kids need, in this time of feeling that there's so things are out of control, communicating in advance and having family meetings are important. So if you know something's going on, like, hey, I got a big week this week, have a family meeting about it. You know, show your child what your schedule is. You know, you never want to make them feel bad or guilty. You're just informing them. But when real life stressors happen at that moment, that's an opportunity to show your child how you're managing it, because they're going to learn from that. They're going to learn the healthy ways to do it. And if you do things like, I always tell everybody this story. I had this breakdown one time in the middle of BJ's where I was screaming at my kids and I'm not perfect.
Right. None of us are.
None of us are. I don't remember what it was for, Astrid, but I remember being so mad and just being like, I had it. And, you know, not one person came up to me and was like, whatever. I literally was crying and yelling. And I think we left the store. Like, I was like, I can't even take it anymore. You know how it is when kids are little and, you know, whatever. And one of my kids is really challenging and pushes the limits of things, right? You know? And I'm sure I was sleep deprived and all that other stuff. So, you know, I went back and was like, look, that was the worst possible thing I could have done. I yelled, I screamed, who knows, somebody could have called the police, whatever, you know, I literally broke it down, but that was not a new conversation. These are conversations that we have and my kids are used to me almost problem solving out loud. You know, if I get an argument with their dad, I'm not going to be like, I got an argument with dad. That's not appropriate. But when we know there's something that has an impact and you can use it in that way, that's really when it's really helpful, Astrid, for your kids to understand, you know, they're not your therapist, but they should know what's going on in the household. And I love to do it with a family meeting and to say, have a family meeting once a week. You can ask them what's going on with them. What are you concerned about? I, you know, recently so busy, people started calling me in the car on the morning, in the mornings. Well, my 10-year-old was like, I'm not cool with that, because that was his one time where he's like alone with me. And I had to tell everybody no more phone calls. So, and that was okay. And it was great because he got a voice and he let me know and he needs me. And I needed to be like, guess what? For the 30 minutes I'm in that darn car, I'm not doing work, right? I need to be present and engaged. And it wasn't that hard to do.
Excellent. Yeah, that is very interesting. You know, sometimes they test us in many ways, but they're also very resilient and they're also very receptive. So we got to keep that in mind as parents. Excellent. So let's move on to, thank you for answering that. Let's move on to the next question. How can you handle coronavirus anxiety as a therapist right now?
Yeah. So I know a lot of therapists are still not seeing, you know, people are working in different capacities where they have to actually see people. So at our center, we are doing both teletherapy and working with people virtually and more in person. And I had some individuals who were completely anxious about returning to work. And I know a lot of people that are anxious about returning to work in general. So, you know, so a lot of therapists have chosen to do teletherapy to address their anxiety, and that's okay. I think we always have to worry about, there are people that are so panicked about getting sick. And I coined this term called reentry panic syndrome because people didn't want to reenter the world and started getting panic attacks. And some people had anxiety before, some people didn't. And it was really stopping them from healing and moving forward. So I have something called the REPS protocol, and it's respirate, envision, and, you know, put into practice all of those components that are, you know, are your stress management tools so that you can start changing your life. And, you know, it goes back to that taking a breath, visualize success, you know, tell yourself, say it out loud, practice it, right? That's what the P is for. And put those stress management strategies every day into place so you can mitigate your anxiety. And I think anytime anybody's stuck with any mental health issue, reach out to a licensed provider. And if a provider is struggling with their own mental health, they need to go and see somebody too. Everybody can be struggling at any point with mental health. But during this pandemic, we're seeing an uptick. We're seeing an uptick in mental health for sure.
Oh yeah. I actually, it's funny because I shared something yesterday, which it kind of like deviates a little bit, but October is, which I wasn't aware, to be honest, domestic violence month, just like, you know, breast cancer awareness. But for me, breast cancer awareness is all year round prevention. I don't believe in just one particular month. Yeah, it's awareness. But and I just said, seek help with the post on my stories on it was about domestic violence and stuff like that. And I'm like, you know, seek help. That's the least that you could do for yourself in terms of, you know, managing your mental health. If you're struggling, if you're going through something right now, the least that you could do is, and also educate yourselves, you know.
Education is so critical.
Right? I believe so. You know, for example, visiting Dr. Roseanne's website, you know, she's got all these therapies, which is in our, you know, arena per se, or lack of a better word, in terms of holistic ways to do it. You know, we talk about the gut brain connection. I've had other podcasts with this, you know, lifestyle is very important. We were just talking before the podcast, you know, how we've been working very hard and a little sleep and things like that. It has an impact on our health, but eventually you take a day off for self-care and you do what you got to do. So excellent. Now let's move on to the next question. How can therapists benefit from this first of its kind book on teletherapy and therapeutic activities?
Yeah. So, you know, I wrote the first ever book on teletherapy activities, which is shocking to me that there's no book out there. And what happened is, you know, therapists have been thrown into the world of teletherapy, but they actually have never been trained for teletherapy because it's not standard in graduate programs. There might be a graduate program out there that does teach it, but it's very rare. And so it's different. So I have this great book and it's over 400 pages and it's just jam packed with activities for therapists to use. They're highly visual so they can pop them up in their teletherapy session, or they can email them, or whatever way that they are working with kids. It's just addressing the most common issues that kids are facing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you know, as I said, I'm on this mission to change mental health. And part of that is teaching providers about the most evidence-based techniques. And the most evidence-based techniques are holistic. So therapy is one of them. And there's different kinds of therapy that are incredibly helpful. But we really teach kids on how to connect to their body because we're so disconnected and we hate these uncomfortable feelings. But uncomfortable feelings are there to alert us to take care of ourselves. And if we keep ignoring them and shoving them down by taking medication, we're actually not really ever addressing an issue and behaviors really get ingrained. And as parents, you know, we want nothing but the best for our kids. And you can have good grades and be the most anxious person or have OCD or depressed, right? And I think, you know, with suicide just being so dramatically on the increase, Astrid, it's gone up 56% in the last 10 years in for 10 to 24 year olds. And what that means is like people are holding things together. Somebody reached out to me this week that one of my best friends, her really good friend in a faraway state, the husband unexpectedly killed themselves. And we think, how could that happen? Because that's what she said. Dr. Rowe, literally no symptoms, like no idea what was going on with him. And we may never know. We may never know. We can only look backwards and put the pieces together, but kids are so distressed. And so I really wanted to teach therapists and give them the best tools to really make this teletherapy highly therapeutic. We have a course that goes with it. You can go to teletherapytoolkit.com. And I know we have a great bonus for any of our listeners. And this is really not just a book for therapists, Astrid. It's a book for anybody that works with kids. Parents have been buying it. There's lots of techniques to be able to work with kids. And it's based on sound theory. So it's really been, I've been super excited about the praise I've been getting. And it's designed to support children's mental health.
Oh, phenomenal. I'm actually very interested in the book. I'm going to give myself a copy because, you know, us parents, one of the best gifts that we could give our children, if you want to raise a good man, woman, I feel, that's my opinion, that we got to do everything we can. Today, we have the tools that our great grandparents didn't have. We have the books, we have online, and it would be a crime, for lack of a better word, for not to educate ourselves and get, you know, tools like these, like this book, to be better parents, because in turn, we're going to get better children, you know, their behavior, right?
Yeah. Well, we want, you know, the thing about it, Astrid, is that, you know, you're so right. Like, our parents didn't know, and our grandparents, you know, everybody's doing the best they can, but, you know, we are not prepared for this pandemic. We are not prepared for the crisis of children's mental health, even before the pandemic. Right. And, you know, your kids show up who they are. And some kids are harder, right? I have a really easy kid. And I have a kid that, like, keeps me on my toes. Like, yeah, I know.
That's mine.
Yep. Yep. It's never going to be like, okay, mom. It's always like a no. And then I got to work with him. And it's just that way. You know, I have a glass half empty and a glass half full kind of kid. Well, two different kids. And so it challenges you. And I'm a therapist who's trained. So I want to give resources to parents. I mean, that's what we do. That's what we do in our Get Unstuck program, which comes out for everybody in November. But it is, you know, a challenging time, and using resources. I mean, I'm a big fan, like, you do a lot for people, Astrid, and giving people information. And there is a lot of information, but ultimately in the end, we want to have something that we can walk through and that people feel like, wow, you know, like, people ask me all the time, oh, how can I come to you? Where can I find a provider like you? I don't know providers like me. That's why people fly in. So that's what these books are about. That's what this course is going to be about. And my other book series comes out in the winter. It's called It's Going to Be Okay. And it's a parent book for how to reverse and reduce children's mental health symptoms. Yeah, absolutely. Because that's the basis of my work. And I've been doing it for almost 30 years. And I don't want parents to feel so isolated and afraid and alone because they don't have the resources, and they don't have, whether the provider's not available or whatnot. So a lot of things, as you know, can be done on your own. And absolutely, you can really make a huge difference by your diet and your, absolutely, the gut health. I mean, come on, these are really important things. Like, people are shocked to learn that your gut has almost as much electrical activity as your brain. And there's a bi-directional back and forth influence between the two. Because they'll say to me, like, why does their gut matter? You know, like, oh, he's always been constipated. I'm like, oh, okay. You know,
when you said that, I'm like, oh, well, yeah, now we know, you know,
now,
like,
we know
you need two toxins. Yeah. Like, you, yeah, exactly. When you hear these things, like, you, if you're like a little bit in the field, you're automatically saying, oh, gee, you know, no wonder.
But parents don't know. And their pediatricians aren't telling them. I mean, I love podcasts. I'm like a huge podcast listener, and I have been for a really long time, as soon as I could get them, because there's such great information, and you can listen in your car. You can listen going to work. You can listen to it when I'm getting ready in the morning. I listen to it, and I squeak in podcasts. I mean, you know, I do listen to music when I'm with my kid, but podcasts are just so phenomenal for digestible information that, you know, really can make a huge difference in your health.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree. You know, podcasts are so easy. And I was just going to say real quick, you know, guys, we are going to have a Q&A where you can come. It's a private session. It's going to be on my Patreon account or my membership website. Either I'm still trying to decide, but it's going to be a closed, private, exclusive session with Dr. Roseanne, and I'm going to bring some of my podcasters are on board, where you could ask your most, like, some of the questions that you're afraid to ask your pediatrician, or that they wouldn't answer. All these questions, we're going to have like a session for us, private. And so you're going to have the chance to do that. So if you are interested, definitely reach out via my website or social media, direct message me and say, I'm interested. And we're going to have, it's going to be a limited amount of people, but definitely it's going to be worth it. So reach out and let me know if you're interested. Excellent. All right. So this is so much fun, learning so much. We're going to move on to the next question. What are the signs and symptoms of anxiety in children?
Yeah. So kids show their anxiety differently than adults, but then again, it's not that different. It's just that often adults will say, I'm so anxious. Kids might not have that ability. And so you'll see physical signs of anxiety, tummy aches, headaches. I have had kids have cyclical vomiting. They do a lot of reassuring questions like, Mommy, what time are you getting home today? What time are you getting home today? Or, oh, am I going to win first place? And they need that constant reassurance. And you know, you also, anxiety can look such a spectrum. On one end, it could be kids that are withdrawn and your classic ideas about anxiety. Then you have irritable kids. Then you can have kids and teens that are ragers. They get fly off the handle. Anxiety is often the basis of most mental health problems, including depression. So depression often starts with long-term chronic anxiety, and you just deplete every component of your system, like your adrenals, your thyroid starts shutting down, you get a gut disruption. And people are often surprised to learn that about depression, you know, and that's where you can unwind these mental health issues by repairing the brain and body, but then coming in with new tools to learn how to prevent those same things from happening. But, you know, when you see your kid is a change, or some kids have always had anxiety, and you don't have to be doing terrible in school, and you can be well-liked, you can have a lot of things going on in a positive and be highly functional and still show high level of stress and anxiety.
Wow. That's very interesting, guys. You know, definitely pay attention to this. It's crucial to stay a little bit of step ahead, you know, learn the symptoms, learn what the signs are, and definitely reach out. Thank you for answering that question, Dr. Roseanne. We're going to move to the next one. How can you keep children engaged? Okay. So actually, no, let me take this back. What is the difference between stress and anxiety? That's a really good question.
Yeah. So anxiety is a situational stressor, something that happens that causes you to experience stress, right? So for, you know, a child, it could be they did badly on a test or forgot to turn in an important assignment or got in trouble when they weren't supposed to get, you know, they got in trouble when they didn't do anything wrong. And so the nervous system reacts and gets into this stress state and then calms down. But with anxiety, it's long-term stress typically, or it's something that goes on for quite a long time where you're having repetitive worries, you're experiencing behaviors associated with anxiety over, they deem, 6 or more months. I don't know if that is, you know, that where that is absolutely the hard line, but it's something that's around. So it's not one stressor, it's experiencing stress and distress for a lengthy period of time.
Gotcha. Excellent. Yeah. All right. So as I'm listening to this, and I'm reading actually some of our notes, something else came up. We have something here that says some of the topics that we're going to discuss. 5 things a therapist can do right now to help an anxious child. I wanted to touch on that, but also what are some of the things that a parent could do? Because now it's different. So with the pandemic, none of us have experienced a pandemic like our children are. So what are five things that a parent could do?
And it's the same thing for a therapist as it is for a parent.
Okay,
right?
Good.
So, you know, I think the first thing is, you know, to provide structure and routine. So we have lost control or feel that we've lost control. And yes, some people really have lost control. They've lost their job. Their income is different. Their work is different. The kids' school is different. Nobody can see their friends. We can't travel anymore. There's a loss of control. Okay. This is not forever. This is definitely not a short-term thing. This is going to go on for a bit. Mm-hmm. So what we can do is when structure and routine is placed in, kids have predictability, they know what comes next, and it really helps kids to feel okay. So that's the first thing you can do. The next thing you can do is you can teach kids that they do have control over themselves in that moment. And so when we teach kids that we can control our mindset, right? So resiliency is about three parts. It's having how you view things, how you manage things, and how you recover from stressors, right? So in that resiliency component, we can teach kids that how they look at a situation is in their control, right? So two people can experience the same stressor and have a totally different response to it.
Yeah.
Why is that? You know, it's because they have a resilient mindset. They say, okay, you know, all right. I mean, this week we don't have school because there was a COVID case. So teaching them and showing them through your abilities, right? And you know, the third part is role modeling. So number three is role modeling stress management techniques for kids, mm-hmm. because when they see, oh, Mrs. Jones, the teacher, or my mom and dad are actually doing things for themselves, and that's how they problem solved, that's how they learn. They learn by watching, not you need to do this. Mm-hmm. I just did a terrible job at this, but you need to do this. So they're right. Watching us. And then, you know, I would say that, you know, four is really showing them how to actually use stress management techniques. So practicing with your kids, breath work, you know, going for a walk, all those healthy things, healthy diet, you know, probiotics, talking about it. Oh, this is good. I know in my house, like we talk a lot about the nutrients that are in foods. And, you know, I was like one of my proudest parenting moments when they were taking cooking at school. The teacher said to me, I've never had kids know more about nutrients in the foods than your kids. And I was
that
like,
is
that's
so
just
cool.
I know, how cool is that? Such a nerdy moment. But like I'm like, and we do like a game, like this is yellow. What vitamins do you think it is and stuff? And they just love it. My kids are really big foodies.
Yeah. It makes it fun too for them to eat, you know.
It makes it fun. And you know, and I would say the last thing is five, but you know, getting like really a legit resource kit for kids. Like these are the best things for you. You love them. And when kids are stressed, you know, say like, what's in your toolkit? Start that dialogue, right? And we never want to, we often talk about mental health when we're in this massive crisis, right? And there's never a bad time to talk about mental health, but let's show them and talk about all the ways that they can do things for themselves, how they can deal with a bully, how they can, you know, deal with all those things that come up in life, and really reinforce them for taking action, right, in a positive way. So we're more likely to change behaviors by reinforcing what we want them to do than telling them what they just did was wrong. It's simple learning principles. So getting that dialogue open. And, you know, I think sometimes we just think kids, yes, they do absorb, but sometimes we just really need to have very direct conversations with our kids. And, you know, it's important.
Absolutely. No, you're right. You know, it's very important to have open communication. And like I was actually asking Dr. Roseanne, you know, like before, how to talk to your children like that. It's, you know, it's, age appropriate. I think that's what it all boils down to. Like, always remember, you know, I remember I was watching Dr. Phil long time ago, and there was an episode where the 13-year-old was getting involved. The parents were getting the 13-year-old involved in their issues, and he was kind of like the referee and things like that. And he said, no, it's that he's not, he doesn't need to know any of that. He's still, you know, this is not the age for him to be knowing all these things, to get him involved. So it all boils down to that. Thank you for answering that question. I wanted to ask, right now, being at home, teaching children and stuff like that, I saw one of the questions was that I wanted to address is, how can parents with special needs, children with special needs, cope, you know, being virtual learning and being at home? How can we do this?
So many kids, if one in two children in the United States have a physical or a mental health problem. So we have lots of kids with special needs, right? They might be physical, they might be mental health. And we're trying to find a rhythm with virtual learning, but it's not easy. So whether your kid is a typical kid and they're struggling, or we already knew they had an issue, again, the first thing you want to do is put lots of structure and routine. You can't just say, go and do your work. Mm-hmm. You have to have a daily schedule. And yes. I like to have my schedule available at the same time so they know. And that's really important, because without that schedule available, but also sticking to the routine, so going to bed at the same time, because that's a big issue that's happening where kids are, you know, oversleeping and missing. You also can't expect your kid to sit for 6 hours. It's not realistic. We can't sit for 6 hours. Like, I've been under these lights for a while today, and all of a sudden I'm like, where are my blue blocker glasses, right? You know what I mean?
Yes, you start kind of like getting all like, I need to like be out of the spotlight.
You know, I know, I need to be out of the spotlight. So they might have a light on, but that constant demand for engagement, where some kids could sit in the back of the room and kind of recharge, they might not be able to have that. You can't really hide in a virtual learning. So making sure that on their schedule of physical breaks, they need to get up, they need to move. That's really important. And ultimately, if you're really struggling with your special needs child and they get, they're either under a 504 plan or an IEP, they're getting specialized instruction, you've got to reach out to the school and you've got to tell them, this is not working. I need help. And even if your child doesn't have a formal educational plan under special services or 504, reach out for help if your kid is struggling, because nobody's going to help you if you don't ask. I think schools are trying the best they can. I really, really do. It's sort of like the Wild West educationally, but, you know, structure, routine, lots of movement, is incredibly, incredibly important to help keep the brain stimulated and for people to get, you know, do well with virtual learning, and for us to be do well with virtual learning, for sure. Lots of movement, lots of breaks.
Excellent. That is a very good point. I was just going to mention that sometimes when I have, it's an idea when my son is home, those days that we're doing schooling from home, I take my break with him, and he says, oh no, I'd rather watch this, this and that. And I'm like, no, honey, let's just go. We need fresh air. We need to walk. We need to move. And I'm like, we're just going to talk about something, or just bring your Beyblades, whatever he play. I'm like, get him out of the house, because that fresh air, daylight, that's going to help in other areas. Better sleep when you expose them to the sun, daylight. And the sun, you know, vitamin D, but then daylight is going to help with their circadian rhythms, which in turn
100%.
It's going to help them sleep better, including myself. I got to do a lot with that. And so that's what I do. On my break, an hour, we just go to the park, this beautiful place that I like, a little bit of a drive, not too long, or whatever. Just get outside with them and, you know, burn some of that energy and get them moving, because you know, I don't love the fact that they're glued at school, but then they have their little peers. They also go on break. So we you know, try to balance it. Thank you for answering that. Let's see. Another question that I had was, we have, how can you promote good coping skills and resilience in children? I don't know if we already addressed that.
We kind of addressed it. And I just think that we want to, at every stage, whether it's how they view it, manage or recover from it in the resiliency mindset process, we really want to reinforce and help kids work through their challenges. We don't want to do it for them. We right. want to help them. We can help them. We can give them a lifeline. But for kids to break out of that negative cycle of always stressing about certain things, we've got to really get them to view things differently. And that takes some work and role modeling and reinforcing them for changing their own thoughts is really, really helpful. And I think it's an important reminder for us when we're feeling so stressed. I have never seen adults more stressed in my entire life. I mean, even if adults' financials haven't changed and working hasn't changed, the world is in a elevated stress cycle right now.
Yes.
And what we need to remember is our mind is ours, and we can choose to, there are things that are outside of our control, and I don't want to negate that and minimize people's negative experiences right now, but we can be in the middle of chaos and choose to look at it one way or another. And we can breathe, we can pray, we can do a lot of things that can be really helpful for us. And that's really so important to teach that to our kids, because it will make a life difference from them. It really will. And managing stress and building resiliency is key.
Oh, that was so beautifully said. Love it. Love it. That's it. You know, just mindset and definitely stay in tune with what's going on. But like what Dr. Rosanne said, just pray, do whatever you have to do, meditation, change your curse when things change, right? I just said it in my own words, but you will not change your circumstances if you continue in the same pattern. So change things and things will change. All right. So we're going to start wrapping it up. My last question is, because I want to hear your input on this. When it comes to mental health, the gut, we were talking about that before, there's a connection between the microbiome, the gut, and the brain, right? So based on your experience and your knowledge, your amazing wisdom, what would you tell our listeners and our viewers? What would you suggest in terms of lifestyle and diet? Like five things that you think are crucial for children's mental health.
Yeah. I mean, my number one, I don't prescribe to a diet, even though I generally follow a paleo diet for myself and my own health issues. I believe in an anti-inflammatory diet. That's the most evidence-based approach to mental health. And so, you know, what are the top things you can do for kids to in this umbrella of a anti-inflammatory diet? So that is reducing or eliminating dairy, sugar, and gluten. Okay. Now, this is where people get stuck. Why? So these are inflammatory foods. And we know a direct causal link between brain inflammation and anxiety and depression, autism, a bunch of other things through clinical research. So if we reduce our inflammatory foods, our mental health improves. And I always start, you know, in my Get Unstuck program, we go through 8 pillars of children's mental health. And I always start with nutrition, because it's actually the quickest thing you can do to turn your mental health around, besides doing breath work, probably. So starting there is really critical. So you might say, oh my gosh, that's all my kid eats. Start small. Start making swaps is where you start. So doing that. And then really adding in nutrient-dense food. Healthy fats are critical. They're so low. We need healthy fat for the neurotransmitter activity in both in our whole nervous system, between our gut and our brain, right? And our vagus nerve is what connects the two. And it's really important. And consistent protein. So kids are not getting enough protein, and level blood sugar is directly related to mood issues, anxiety. And so giving them those consistent protein pieces are important. So that anti-inflammatory diet, putting stress management techniques are your two biggest things that you can do on your own that have a quick and immediate effect on mental health. And I like to do these things as a family. I don't like to just do this for one child.
Yes.
It's a lot of pressure on one child. And of course, you know, reach out for help. There's licensed providers everywhere. Ask for your friend, go on to, you know, the big websites like Anxiety and Depression Association of America. You can find a provider, anywhere. And teletherapy has made it where there's no borders, right? So right. You can find in your state somebody that's 6 hours away if you live in Texas and you now can go to them, right? Mm-hmm. Because you're doing it via teletherapy, which is amazing.
It's amazing. Yes, that's it. You couldn't have said it better. Thank you so much for answering that. Well, this basically concludes the podcast. But before we go, I wanted to mention that, again, remind you of that Q&A that we're going to be having on Patreon or my membership website. So stay tuned for that and definitely reach out if you are interested. Also, I wanted to encourage you to connect with Dr. Roseanne on her website, drroseanne.com or childrensmentalhealth.com. Also, there is the new website is.
Yeah. So I have it. I have teletherapy toolkit, but I also have a bonus for your listeners. Okay. So if anybody wants these amazing coping statements that you can use for yourself, you can share with your kids. You can be a school professional. You can be a parent. You can be a licensed therapist. But there are all these coping statements. I think there's 6 pages of them that I've been collecting for 30 years and ways to help your kids learn coping skills. And it's teletherapy toolkit bonus, all one word, .com. And you can just, you put in your email and you get a free download. They're a wonderful resource that you can use and use as a reference forever.
Excellent. We're going to be talking about some of those and other bonuses on our Q&A, on a private Q&A. So yeah, that's important and definitely get those bonuses from Dr. Roseanne. You could also get in touch with her on Facebook at Dr. Roseanne Capanna Hodge. I will, everything is going to be on her dedicated page on my website, the links where to reach her. Also on LinkedIn at Roseanne Capanna Hodge. I think I mispronounced that before.
No, you got and it. You got
I
it.
I got it. Okay. And on Instagram is Dr. Roseanne and Associates. So I'm going to, I actually have an Instagram video that I posted before we started where you could follow her. I tagged her on there. Dr. Roseanne, thank you so much for your time. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you. We learned so much. And I love this topic because it's super relevant right now. I hope I can have you again.
And I would love to be on again. We had a good time, Astrid, before yes. we got on and during the show.
We did. We instantly clicked. And that's what I love because we are on that same journey. We love to raise awareness to help. And so, yeah, it's been great. Thank you again for your time and looking forward to having you again.
Be well, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Hey guys, so today might be your lucky day. I will be picking a few lucky reviewers. Each will win a copy of my ebook, Top 10 Foods for a Super Healthy Lymphatic System. You will be chosen randomly, of course, and will be contacted once I pick the winners. So go ahead and give me your best review. Honest, obviously. You could leave a review either on iTunes, your favorite podcast channel, or also on Podchaser. So go ahead and leave a review. Today might be your lucky day.